Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest just opened a restaurant in the West Loop. Well, it was this past fall, but Monteverde, a neighborhood soulful Italian spot on Madison Street, is already making a splash. It was included in several of the top new restaurant of 2015 lists. And Sarah Grunberg continues to see success in early 2016. You may know Sarah's name. She was once the chef de cuisine at Spiaggia and a television star. Well, she was runner-up on season 9 of Top Chef on Bravo. Tonight, we talk opening restaurants, reality TV fame, and soulful Italian. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Nice to meet you. All right, so let's talk about the food. I mean, I said soulful Italian. What does that mean?
Oh, gosh. Soulful Italian, to me, is capturing the heart of the cuisine that you can taste years of tradition. When you think of Italian food, I think you think of a grandmother, mm-hmm. you know, cooking for the family. And that kind of coincides with how I was raised and also with cooking. And I think that's why Italy is so exciting to me as a cuisine and as a country.
Well, you grew up in Texas.
Yes.
So you're not a native Chicagoan. But, I mean,
No. So
in Texas, what were the inspirations for you? What were the influences on your work?
Well, you know, my grandparents were a huge influence. I would go and spend the summers with them fishing and helping my grandfather with his cattle. He had like over 200 head of cattle.
Wow.
And they always had a garden and they made pickles and my grandmother made bread. Like they didn't buy bread at the store. And I think that learning that food comes from hard work was something that I understood at a young age. Not that just meat shows up at the grocery store, you know, wrapped in plastic, that it's actually an animal that needs a lot of care and love and all those things, I think, really shape me for who I am as a chef.
As making the choice to go into the culinary arts to become a chef, I mean, does it go all the way back in your history to that moment where you were going to your grandparents? Or what was the defining moment where you said, you know what, I'm going to make my life in this?
Well, you know, I was a rebellious teenager, and I ended up cooking for my friends after school. And they'd all come over, and it was, Sarah's making lasagna today, or, you know. And so we would all play, like, what was that, Nintendo 64 back then, like 007, and I would be cooking lasagna. And so that, I kind of realized, wow, my hobby is cooking. I really like cooking. And my mom didn't complain. If I was cooking, then she was happy. And then the Food Network came out when I was about 12. And that's when I realized that chefs, like you could be a chef. Growing up in Texas where I was from, it was a lot of chain restaurants where there were just like, there wasn't a face to the food. And when the Food Network came out and Irma Lagasse was there and, you know, those crowning shows, then I realized, wow, you can be a chef. And I think that was in like probably 95. Mm-hmm. And that's when I think that the U.S. started looking at chefs differently. Back then, I think they would bring a lot of chefs in from Europe to run big
right.
hotels and cruises.
And it was a lot of hotels and cruises. It wasn't
yeah.
this concept of, you know, standalone restaurants.
Right. I mean, there were some for sure, but not where I was from. So.
Well, one of those restaurants is Spiaggia. I mean, Pete and I were just talking about how Spiaggia almost predates the foodie explosion. Here in Chicago, everyone knows where Spiaggia's at. Everyone knows just how great that restaurant is. And it sometimes gets lost when you think about, oh, there's a new place opening here in the West Loop, in the South Loop, wherever it is, you know. And people forget about Spiaggia, but it's always been there. What? Tell us about how you got to Spiaggia.
Wow. I got to Spiaggia with a plane ticket. Well, I worked for the Brennan family in Houston for 4 years, and that's the Commander's Palace, deeply rooted restaurant family. And I learned hospitality there. And I became the youngest sous chef at 22 for the Brennan family. And I knew I needed to go to a different city to see food in a food city. And so Chicago was the perfect option. I got a Southwest flight. And my friend, she was actually going to Second City, and she's like, come stay in my apartment. And my chef, Carl Walker, called several restaurants up here and said, I have this great chef. She's looking for jobs, and set up interviews. And right before I flew out, I interviewed at Spiaggia. It was like the same day I was flying out. And they said, well, we really like you. I met with Missy Robbins, and she said, well, you would need to come back. So then another plane ticket, and I flew up and staged for 2 days. And then she hired me, and I called my mom, and I said, I got the job. And then she started crying, and she booked a flight the next day. that Sunday, and we were looking for apartments, and that's how I got here.
Well, let's talk about your time at Spiaggia, because a lot of chefs come through that kitchen.
That's,
I mean, everybody, I mean, it has that Charlie Trotter effect.
Absolutely.
In the way that it does. So what did you learn from Spiaggia, and at what point were you like, you know what, I am ready to make the move myself to my own restaurant, to Monteverde?
I mean, working closely with Tony Montuano was some of the best time of my life. He's a great chef who really believes in allowing the people under him to spread their wings. He's really nurturing in that way. He doesn't put his thumb down, you know, like, and hold you down. He allows you to make mistakes and learn from them, which I think is really good and bad at the same time, but really good mostly. And, well, Spiaggia taught me about Italian food and how simple it is.
Right.
I mean, cooking Creole cuisine where the sauce was, you know, everything, right? And now going to an Italian cuisine where olive oil is the sauce and, you know, pasta, you don't pre-cook it. You cook it from fresh. And it just blew my mind. And when I got promoted to Chef de Cuisine, how Tony did it was so cool. He asked me if I had a passport. And I started crying because I was like, oh, my God, is someone sending me to Italy? Like, holy cow. And so Tony knew that in order for me to be successful, I needed to experience Italy for the first time. And that trip was when I caught the bug, when I realized that this was my path.
What about that trip? I mean, when you get sent by Tony Montuano to Italy, what are you doing there? And what do you take away from that trip?
Wow, a lot. I had a ticket into Rome and a ticket leaving Milan. And I was 26 years old, didn't speak the language. I started in Rome. I staged in two restaurants.
And that means, just for the people at home, stage means you guessed, right?
Yeah, stage is like kind of like a working interview if you're looking for the job. And if not, people also stage to just help out in the kitchen and learn things from that chef. Staging in Rome, I learned how to make cacio e pepe and carbonara, and that's when I tasted those Roman dishes. It was really, really cool. I actually had like a little apartment that I stayed in for a week, and I felt kind of like a Roman, and I didn't know what that meant, but yeah. Actually, the first thing I ate was raw shrimp, and I had to suck the heads out of the raw shrimp.
Wow.
And I was like, holy cow, this is crazy, but that's one of my favorite memories. And then from Rome, I went to Tuscany, spent some time with a good friend of ours, Alessandro Bellini, who has Viola Imports here in Chicago. I stayed with his mom and grandmother and brother, and we went and ate and experienced Tuscany and olive oil. And from there, then the most crucial part of the trip was meeting Andrea Bezzecchi. And he is a third generation balsamic maker. That meeting wasn't even supposed to happen. And he drove and picked me up in Parma and took me to his village called Novellara. And that was when I totally was, my mind was blown. That's where Parmigiano Reggiano is made. I got to experience that, prosciutto di Parma, and balsamic. And I learned that balsamic was really a special ingredient. And then from there, I went to Del Pescatore, which is where Tony and Kathy worked 20 years before when they were going to open Spiaggia. And that's a 3 Michelin starred restaurant run with a female chef, Nadia Santini. And I staged there. And then I went to Milan and spent some time in Milan. And then
that's a good trip.
And then I flew back. And in fact, our flight was canceled because so much snow. It was like record snow. And we were cooking at the James Beard House in New York the next day. So I had to end up just flying to New York and cooking at the Beard House the next day. It was a...
That's a good...
It's a rule, but...
At least it's good memory, right? Sarah Grunberg's a chef and partner at Monteverde. It's a restaurant that just opened in the West Loop. When we come back, let's talk about that experience, about going from what you learned at Spiaggia and applying it to not only your what you want to do with in the kitchen, but also a new restaurant.
Okay.
It's a download. Stay with us. Welcome back to the download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Sarah Grunberg. She's the chef partner at Monteverde, the new restaurant in the West Loop. You know, you chef de cuisine, we just told a story about, you know, going to Italy, learning all about how to cook Italian food with one of the best here in Chicago. What made you say, you know what, it's time for me to branch out and to open my own place?
Yes. Well, you know, it came after Top Chef. I stayed on at the Spiaggia for, oh gosh, I think almost 2 years after the show. And Top Chef gave me the confidence that I needed to cook my food. And in fact, the judges looked at me during a challenge and they said, we know you can cook great Italian food. When are you going to show us your food? And I was like, well, what's wrong with Italian food? And so through that and through at that point, I'd been to Italy now 7 times, traveling all over. And so I really was starting to put together my story of Italian food. And that ties in the experiences with my family and ingredients and travel. I got to go to Asia for the first time and experience that. And that's when I started to put the story of pasta together. And it really became something that I wanted to celebrate. And that's what Monteverde is the celebration of pasta.
It's interesting because we have a lot of musicians on the show or even actors or writers, and they'll talk about, you know, finding their voice. And for chefs, it's not different. I mean, the idea of you need to find what's your take on the food that you're presenting.
Yeah, it takes a long time. I mean, I started cooking right when I was 19 and I'm 34 now. So, you know, you have to put the time in because you don't have the confidence. It's something that you kind of wake up overnight by putting the pieces together and go, oh, that's how it clicked together. But yeah, finding my voice was something that was a great experience.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Tony Montuano and you mentioned your experience on Top Chef. Those people seem to both want to nurture you or push you forward to say, find your voice. I mean, that seems to be what you hear from Chef Tony, what you hear from obviously watching Top Chef. How important was it for the people around you to continue to push you to find that voice?
I mean, it's really important. I didn't want to let Tony down. I really wanted to make Spiaggia the best that it could be. And for me, that confidence also came from learning the regionality of the Italian food and how important the regions are. And, you know, I kind of now I do it for all the people that mean something to me. I have this restaurant for my grandparents, for Tony, for Jamie, my fiance. You know, we met at Spiaggia. My business partner, Meg, her and I met at Spiaggia 10 years ago. You know, as much as I do it for myself, I do it for the people that believe in me and that push me. And I want them to be proud.
Let's talk about the restaurant because, you know, it's one thing to find the voice in your food. It's another to entirely to open up a restaurant.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much that goes into running a business. How were you prepared for the transition of not just being a chef, but being a chef partner?
You know, my first sous chef job at Spiaggia, I was the purchasing chef. And so I purchased all the ingredients for all three of the entities there, cafe, private dining, and Spiaggia. And I was responsible for the food cost. And that's when I learned the products and the prices and really mastered the art of ordering, which a lot of chefs.
Yeah, right.
It's really hard.
That's especially when you're working from scratch or working fresh. That's a valuable resource.
Yes, absolutely. And then that was the great thing about what Levy Restaurants does for their chefs is they really push you to run the business yourself, of course, with the guidelines that they have. But I learned a lot about business. To me, the time of being the purchasing chef and then the executive chef at Spiaggia, it was like a mini business degree, you know, how to run a restaurant. Mm-hmm. My business partner now, Meg, she actually went to business school. So luckily, I don't need to worry about those things. She is the brain of Monteverde. She writes the budget and makes sure that we're on task and really is the rock of the restaurant.
Let me ask you this, because we've had different chefs and restaurateurs in here. And, you know, there's always this thought, because you were on Top Chef, that this is a very glamorous life, that you're running a restaurant, that, you know, you get to taste the stuff, you come in, you get your limo outside and you roll to the next spot. This is a very demanding job. And talk to us about the challenges of running a restaurant. And it's not the glamour. You're not rich and famous just from being in charge of a restaurant.
Sure. I mean, it's a dirty job. Like, no one's going to sleep as well as you will, or got to clean out the drains and all that fun stuff. Like, it's, you know, it's a lot. And cooks need a lot of leadership. A restaurant it's a breathing, organic being. The reason why we all say it's a family and restaurants become our family, it's because it's true. It's like, you know, as much as we love everybody, and sometimes you're like, oh God, I got to get out of here, or, you know, and being the leader of that is 24/7 job.
Demanding. I mean, not only being the chef, you have to open the doors, and you talk to a lot of different chefs, and they're like, it is a 24-hour job.
Yes, because it's cooking. the margin for error is still very high. Keeping it consistent, the execution of the food consistent, I think for me has been the hardest thing with opening a new restaurant, because we opened from scratch. This isn't our second restaurant. This is our first one. We didn't get to pull anybody in that had worked under me for several years. You know, it was right. Like everyone has to start to learn what I expect and what I want for this kitchen. And that's a whole growing experience on its own. And for me to figure out what Monteverde is, I mean, that doesn't happen overnight. And as you get in the kitchen and start working and seeing the food coming out, that's when you really, I think for me, I started to put the pieces of what Monteverde truly is. But it doesn't happen until you're actually in the space, in the kitchen cooking.
Well, let's take a break for the news here on The Download. Sarah Grunberg's my guest. She's the chef partner at Monteverde. She spent years as chef de cuisine and executive chef at Spiaggia, and also was a finalist on Top Chef. When we come back, let's talk about that, because that you talked about, you know, how they pushed you to find your voice. But it's also it's just exploded in the way that you'll be the third or you are the third alumni in just the West Loop. I mean, Chicago is such a presence on the show. When we come back, we'll talk more with Sarah about that experience and setting up shop in the West Loop. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest, Sarah Grunberg. She's the chef partner at Monteverde over in the West Loop on Madison Street. Sort of the newest restaurant, but it seems like every 10 minutes a restaurant's opening up in that area. What's it like to be a part of such an explosive restaurant scene that's happening here in Chicago?
It's great. I think that Chicago and the diners of Chicago, that they support these chef-run businesses, I think is fantastic. And like I said, that didn't happen in Houston where I was from. You know, how many chain restaurants do you really see in Chicago?
Right.
Not that many.
Not that many.
It's a lot of chef-run concepts. And I think that's what makes this food city really top-notch, in my opinion.
You came off of Top Chef. You were a finalist in season 9, which was 2011. That's 5 years ago now. Isn't it amazing to think that was 5 years ago?
Yeah, it makes me tired thinking about it
Do you feel that experience, I mean, obviously it was transformative in the way that, you know, it made you a food celebrity. But thinking back on that experience, I mean, there's obviously the pros, but what were the cons? I mean, just people just constantly come in. We just, right before you came in the studio, someone's like, hey, Sarah. I mean, that's a good thing.
But oh, it's a great thing.
Is there anything that we should know about being a contestant on Top Chef that isn't so great?
I mean, it's really hard. Like, my mom was like, it would have been great if you would have worn lipstick. And I was like, you have no time. My hair looked terrible in half those segments. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just throwing. I was like, I was just trying to cook, you know. It's like, I just looked terrible. So it's like, you know, you don't know when you're going to wake up. You know, they get you going. And, you know, it's, to me, looking back on it, it's so cool to be thrown into this kind of alternate environment where there's a whole team. I mean, the production team is huge, and their whole purpose is to build these like obstacle courses for you to go through. There's nothing like that in normal life where that happens.
Right.
You know, it's like an experiment. It's like, who's going to make it this week? That's really how it is. And God, like everyone, I think for me, the hardest part is that when you watch the show, the viewers feel like we're competing against each other, and, you know, they create this rivalry. But to be completely honest with you, it's an internal competition.
Right. It's just for you.
It's,
right.
I'm fighting to make it myself. It's, you don't have time to look and see what the other people next to
you are
doing.
But they edit it to make it seem like that's the competition.
You have no time. Like, yeah. You're like, can I cook this amount of food, you know, in 2 hours? I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to do this and make it taste fantastic and buying ingredients at the grocery store. Like, it's insane. You know?
Well, I mentioned before that, you know, you will be the third, or you are the third alumni of the show that just set up within blocks. I mean, it's, I mean, how strong, I mean, there's so many different people from Chicago that have competed on that show. What's the camaraderie like? I mean, is there a special sort of head nod and wink to the people that were on the show?
Yeah, it's a sorority or a fraternity. I mean, I never went to college in that kind of environment. And it's like your own club. I mean, it's like when you meet other top chefs, you're like, hey, what's up? Even if you never met them, you just know. It's like we've been through this together. You know, it's kind of like summer camp, right?
Right.
It's like those days at camp, you know, it's like those days at Top Chef.
And it's kind of like a camp.
It is. It's, and you know, the first, I tell people that I'm like, the first day you're going, ugh, what am I doing? And then the last day you're like, I don't want to go home. I want to stay with my friends. Like, you really become this like really tight group, especially when you go as far as the, you know, we did and that I did all the way to the end. I mean, I made it all the way to the final,
right,
which was awesome.
Looking back on it, I mean, obviously you're now in a position where you have your own restaurant. And Chicago, like you said, it's such an interesting way to look at it that there are a lot of chef sort of run, locally run restaurants and not chains here in Chicago. But another part of it is, you know, you'll see other chefs become restaurateurs where, you know, I think of One Off Hospitality or Hog Salt, companies that have taken one restaurant and made 10, you know, 15. Where do you see yourself? I mean, do you see yourself... Are you at the point where Monteverde is your restaurant and this is what you're going to do? Or are you thinking more along the track that you're going to be a business that opens more restaurants?
Oh, man. I think, you know, for Meg and I, we both felt like we wanted to open more. But after going through this with Monteverde, I will be very happy and blessed if it's successful and busy and people love it long term. I think that longevity of restaurants is really hard. And like,
yeah,
we talked about that with Spiaggia. I couldn't imagine, you know, having 10 kids to worry about. Like, one kid is enough. And I think that for restaurateurs to have those many restaurants, you know, you have to spend time at the restaurant that needs you the most. And it's a constant balance. Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe something really casual, like counter service concept.
Like a window that opens up on
yeah,
the side,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Monteverde
right now,
to go.
It'd be awesome. I love it.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
It's interesting because there's the old adage that says, you know, most restaurants, regardless of its of their style, they'll be lucky to hit 5 years. It's a very volatile because of the ups and downs of ingredients. And the business is very short term and the overhead is very low. So talk a little bit about, you know, what's successful for you. I mean, for a restaurant like this, I mean, is it successful to have Monteverde for the rest, you know, for eternity? Or is it the idea that, you know, hey, if this thing makes it to a certain point, you know, maybe I'll try my next concept.
I mean, I'd be really blessed if we're open as long as Spiaggia has, you know, if we can push the 30-year mark, what a blessing. And, you know, I think I'll take a chapter from Tony's lesson to me, which is promote people from within to help keep that restaurant alive. And that's what you have to do. But to keep the restaurant, for me, with Monteverde now, I'm just cooking what I love to eat. Like, I wanted to create a restaurant that I can cook Italian food like I experienced it for people in Chicago to get a real Italian experience. And the food's got to be craveable. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of like,
and this town is
food
not
somewhere got uncraveable. Do you know what I mean? At restaurant, you'll go and you're like, that was good. Do you want to eat it every day? No. But Italian food's craveable.
And Italian food is a big part of Chicago. I mean, there's a lot of Italian food from Spiaggia at the high end to what you guys do. But there's also a mom and pop kind of thing. I mean, you have a lot of restaurants, even in the West Loop or close to the West Loop, like La Scarola, where there's some straight up like long term serving Italian restaurants. How do you compete with that? People have their favorites. It's like, it feels to me like that's a favorite restaurant. If I have Italian, I have a favorite.
You do, yes. You know, I don't know. My secret, I guess, is just cooking food from the heart, and I think that's where the soulful presence comes from. And it might sound cheesy, and I'm not trying to be cheesy about it, but that's how I cook. Like, I get really emotional about food. I get emotional about the story that food tells, the stories of people traveling, you know, pasta coming from China to Rome through the Silk Road, and how, you know, pre-Christopher Columbus, there were no tomatoes, corn, squash, bean. Like, those New World foods were not in Italian food, and people think of Italian food as tomato sauce.
Right.
Well, what's the story of Italian food before that? And I think that, I don't know, I just get really emotional about food and I love it. Like, my brain, it's like a curse. Like, my brain never shuts off about food, ever.
It's a curse.
Treadmill. Some of my best recipe creations have been at the gym, which I probably need to get to the gym now. But I have been a little busy at the restaurant.
Well, good to know. I mean, your restaurant, Monteverde, is the newest addition to the West Loop. It's on Madison Street. And my guest tonight, Sarah Gruenberg, who was a finalist Top Chef Season 9 and also the former Chef de Cuisine at Spiaggia. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you for being here. And, you know, for all of us, we hope that you continue to come up with new recipes while at the gym, I guess. I don't know.
Well, they're always, my brain's always on, basically.
Hopefully it doesn't shut off.
Thank you.
Good conversation there with Sarah Grunberg. It's great. You know, I love sitting down with chefs. It's amazing to me how many great chefs are in Chicago, number one. And number two, are working right now under other chefs. I mean, that's what Sarah did. I mean, she worked under Tony Montuano and Spiaggia for years and is able to branch out. I mean, it's almost like a coaching tree for the NFL.
Yeah, right. Seriously.
So it's amazing. I mean, it's great. Good for her. And I am looking forward to partaking in that restaurant.
Oh, I am starving.
Are you really?
Oh, man.
It's the no sugar.
I think it is. Yeah, I wonder if we can call it. Would they deliver here?
Oh, that's so, yeah.
That's a radio thing
that's
to
such
do.
Such a radio thing to do. I know, and we can get a couple pastas over here. When I started on the show, and that is a radio thing to do, but there was always a question of people working nights are like, hey, where's the food? Because that's a big thing. Like, you can get people to order food.
Bring over dinner.
But we bring our stuff from home. We're home guys.
Yeah. I have my breakfast, lunch, and dinner, my three meals that we usually eat here.
It's so much Tupperware that is stacking up in our office right now. And, you know, I've been on this Crock-Pot challenge.
Yeah.
For the last...
How's that going?
It's going pretty well. I'm getting more skilled at cutting vegetables. The first time I did it and the second time I did it, it was so precise. Took like 45 minutes to cut an onion. Now I'm just like... And it's in there. No, the latest I did was like a sausage and peppers kind of thing. So good. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
What kind of cutlery are you working with? Do you have, like, good knives, or...?
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know. It's whatever knives are there. They were good at one point. I think when I got them when...
Your birthday present coming up. Right.
So, you should give me a gift certificate for a sharpening. Like, not new knives, but just the sharpening.
Yeah.
I'm sure people do that, right? You go to a place and be like, can you sharpen these?
Yeah, up in Rogers Park, that at the farmer's market, they usually have... A sharpener there.
Nice.
Bring your knives and
sharpen
them.
That would be a good present, wouldn't it? It's $15. $15 gift certificate to sharpen this. To sharpen. I don't know what you want to sharpen. You sharpen whatever you want.
Everything, like when I take a stab at cooking, everything much like yourself. Maybe you didn't say this, but when you're meticulous, like it takes me like 45 minutes to make a salad.
Yeah. I'm terrible. What I don't understand is it was a good call to do the Crock-Pot stuff because it's really giving me a chance to see how different ingredients come together. It's great to watch 8 to 10 hours of something like just sort of simmer and then cook. And then you're like, wow, it's great for here. I just do it. Then I go back home and it's there. But, you know, I'm looking forward to the next step, you know, like putting in a saute pan, you know, or trying something that might be a little bit like making a sauce.
Making your own sauce.
Yeah. Right now, I mean... Don't get me wrong. I still got a long way to go. You know, if you listen to the show, you know that, you know, one of my New Year's resolutions was to cook more. And I decided the best way to do that was to go to the Target and buy the crock pot, mm-hmm. which the price was wrong, but I was too scared to argue about it. And so I feel like I'm probably on the sixth or seventh recipe now.
Wow.
Yeah, and I feel like it's going well. I did a enchilada over the weekend.
Did you buy a book? Did you mm-hmm. buy a cookbook?
I bought a book, and the book's no good. But I realized there's this thing that Al Gore invented that's called the internet, and there's a lot of – there's like just like crock pot everything. I don't know why anyone makes a book anymore, like a recipe book, because you can find all that stuff on all the sites. It's funny because I was at Whole Foods. And they have, you know, Bon Appetit or magazines, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I should get one of these magazines. You know, they're going to be recipes. I should be that kind of guy. Like, it was like $14 for the magazine, which is crazy.
What?
Yeah, it was totally, totally, totally too expensive.
Does it come out once a year?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what I was doing. That's a big part of like anything I do at the grocery store. I don't know what I'm doing. And I got it home, and it wasn't even like, it was just like, oh, you want to make your own stock? No, I don't. I want to be able to do something very simple. Mm-hmm. And I realized I may have overshot. That magazine was not for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's I made maybe a huge mistake.
Maybe next year.
Yeah, I'm not. Be I'm ready not. For it. Yeah, I'm not. You know, creating kale. Yeah. You know, like a kale sauce. That's just not my thing.
Put it up on your like refrigerator. And, right. You know, and that's like your goal. Like, you know, if you need my picture, I put my picture of my bikini.
Anyone comes over, I put it out. Oh. Well, yeah, I was just with maybe a couple little post-it notes in different spots. Yeah, just I'm working on a kale sauce. No, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I'm 41 years old and I feel like I spent the last my adult life avoiding cooking. And I know that's weird. I do a lot of takeout. I do a lot of pizzas and a lot of delivery. And I just, mm-hmm. you know, I'm a guy's guy in that kind of way. And the basics I got covered. I can do pasta. I can do that kind of stuff when I need to do something that's different. But I really never got into it. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, like, trying to put this together has been kind of a great adventure through January. I just got to stick at it. You know what I got to do is Sloppy Joe's. Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that, don't you pretty much make that in a crock pot? Isn't that what crock pots are for? I feel like there's, like, 9 Sloppy Joe's things in the book. You like Sloppy Joe with cheese.
Yeah.
You know, Wild Boar Sloppy Joe. Like that kind of stuff. You're just like, all right.
Yeah, it's good that the crock pot, you can kind of just set it and let it go.
That's the best thing in the world.
Last weekend or a couple of weekends ago, I decided to make the family grilled cheese. You know, basic. But again, everything takes me so long that I ended up making just one grilled cheese because it was like, I don't feel like making the second one. It's too much work. I'm going to just like put slabs and peanut butter and jelly on this plain bread.
Right.
Yeah. Cooking's hard.
It is hard. 847 says, I did the gas station microwave beef and bean burrito. It was really good tonight. So that's a thank you for that. And 224 says, sur la table. Is that right how you say it?
Sure.
Is it sur la table? No, it's table, right? It's sur la table.
Mm-hmm.
They sharpen knives.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So there you go.
you need all the help you can get.
Rob, where do you get your knives? Are you a cooker? You cook? You chef?
You know what? I wish I had more time.
Yeah.
I've got like one or two, like two signature dishes that I can do that taste pretty good.
What do you do? What is? Come on.
I do. It's very easy. It's shrimp. Sauteed in lemon, olive oil, and garlic over linguine.
Oh, yes.
Is really yummy and really quick, actually, too, which is great. And then I do, we've got a family meatball recipe, which is good.
I think we should do a download, like, cooking show. Like, we should go up to the test kitchen up here at the Tribune and, like, just pitch it. Pitch it to Tribune Media.
Or what we could do is the three of us bring in our signature dishes and then have kind of like a...
It would have to be like 10 hours because mine's going to be a crockpot thing. And we'd have to wait here 10 hours till mine simmered.
I like Rob's thinking, though. The little top chef, chef contestants.
We should go right up to the CEOs of Tribune Media and be like, we have a new idea. It's a cooking show.
We want Padma Lakshmi.
Hey, Larry Word.
Hey, Larry.
What do you think of these meatballs? You like them? They're juicy, aren't they?
Would you like Rob's meatballs? Do you like Pete's salad, peanut butter and jelly?
I would murder all of you.
Would you want to be in?
Oh.
I'm just going to say that.
How about
no contest?
How about this? This is the new beef. What would you bring to the table? What would be your signature dish, Esmeralda?
I do a mean chile verde.
Oh man, no!
That's a pork shoulder.
Yeah.
Cooked for a couple hours. Super tender. It's delicious.
Oh, man.
I also, some friends of mine, we do competitions. We did a chili cook-off.
Oh, great.
And now we're doing a soup one, and I know I have it in the bag. My dad gave me a recipe for his broth for a Chinese noodle soup.
Oh.
And I'm going to make homemade wontons.
Wow. That's impressive.
Kill it.
I know, right?
Kill it.
I'm feeling so inadequate right now.
I know.
Meatballs and shrimp.
I was really feeling good about this conversation until everyone started saying, oh, this is what I do at home. And I'm like, oh, well, I put 6 sausages in a cut-up onion and a thing of pasta sauce, and I did it for 9 hours.
Yeah, let's get this going.
Yeah, I think it would be good. It'd be almost like I think a chili cook-off's a good idea. I wouldn't even know what to do, but who's the judge? Do we just get people off Michigan Avenue?
We'll get, like, you know, Catherine DiOrio, you know, that's the, you know,
think
check
people
please
from the biz.
Yeah.
Yeah, like get a Brendan Soderkopf in here and be like, I like.
Yes.
I like what Esmeralda's throwing out here. Mm-hmm. I like this.
Not sure if Rob threw a full block of salt in this, but it's a little salty.
Yeah, get the movers and shakers of the city, the food culinary scene here to.
I think we're onto something. I think we got it. I think a cook-off that's judged by the prime, mm-hmm. the primo, cream of the crop.
Grant Achatz.
Achatz comes in and tastes all of our stuff and decides who the winner is. Oh, my God. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then perhaps if the winner wins a menu item on the person's restaurant, like Grant Achatz has to serve Esmeralda's wontons.
Right.
At next,
I think Esmeralda's in.
Could I get to next? Would I be able to go in?
Absolutely not. There's no reservations available. That's the only catch, is that you can't taste your own stuff because it takes 6 months to get a reservation. I think you're onto something, Pete.